Need to. And now we're recording in progress. I'm now going to go off and you will say your name, your position, why you're happy to be at the conference, a few words about what you're going to tell people and how you're looking forward to seeing them. That's going into this big montage, okay? So I'm going to go off now. Stu, what do I press to get myself off? Here. See how good I am.
Hello, my name is Dr. Tebi Tope Hannah Farumbi. I'm a neurologist from Nigeria. I practice at the Global Brain. Oh, jeez. I think we can start again. I hope that's okay. One to go.
So you should know that. I did it on purpose. I went back to tell you what I should have said before, which is it's all editable. You could start all over again. We have no time issue. The only time issue we have is your time issue. So I'm leaving again and start again. And then if you don't like that, just stop a few seconds and start again.
Okay. Hello, my name is Dr. Temi Tope Farumbi. I'm a geriatric neurologist from Nigeria. I practice at the University College Hospital, specifically Chief Tony Anini Geriatric Center at UCH Ibadan. And I'm happy to be part of the International Federation of Aging Conference that is holding in Cape Town in September 2025. And in this conference, I'll be talking about never too late, never too early, how we can promote optimal brain health across lifespan. It is important for us to see how we can bring brain health to the classroom, among the adolescents, as well as also to see how we can talk to the government for policies to ensure that brain health becomes a part of us, a part of our society for optimal output. I look forward to seeing all of you, and we are going to have an exciting time deliberating and coming up with something beautiful after the conference. Thank you.
You're a pro. You're a professional. You didn't tell me that you're a professional. Beautiful. That really was nice. So that's your piece that's going into that. Very good. No problem. All right. Now we're going to do this. Now the next part is all audio. I get a transcript. I can edit it any way that works. So if you have, even if you say, oh, Maura, I don't care, it all gets good. Now the name of this is called On the Ground, and I'm going to be interviewing you. Then the questions I'm going to ask you, you're going to know the answer to every one of them. So I don't even have to tell you what they are. All right. So here we go. Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg. This is a terrific episode of On the Ground. We're going to be speaking today with Dr. Tepi. We're going to be Temi Topi, right? Farumbi.
Yes.
Farumbi.
Yes.
Farumbi. Farumbi.
Farumbi. Yes.
Here we go. Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and this is On the Ground. And today, as always, we speak with regard to what an NGO can learn from another NGO. And today we have a very special guest. She is usually in Nigeria. She's with us today from the great city of Dublin, Ireland. Her name is Dr. Tepi Topi Farumbi, and she is a clinical geriatric neuroscientist and neurologist. She works tirelessly with regard to actual patients in an actual university hospital, but she is also working with an NGO on promoting brain health in older adults and understanding it. So let's talk a little bit about her mission and also how that's playing out on the global field. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Adrian.
So tell us exactly what the center that you work with is all about and what you do first at the center before we deal with the NGO that you're so involved with.
Okay. The center I work with is University College Hospital Ibadan. It's the foremost teaching hospital in Nigeria and West Africa, and is also the largest. And also it houses the foremost geriatric center in sub-Saharan Africa. named Chief Tony Anini Geriatric Center, and we currently have over 30,000 older adults who are 60 and above that has enrolled with us in the last 7 years. So that's the center where I actually practice, actually one of the neurologists practicing at that center at the moment. But beyond that, what we experienced in the clinic also made me to want to go into the community so that we can actually treat people in the community. And that was what led me to founding Brain Health Initiative Nigeria. I understand that people come to the clinic very late, and when we have almost very impossible for intervention, and there are a lot of perception and stigma around neurological condition. Example, person living with dementia is often tagged as a witch or has a voodoo or has any bad, any has done something bad in their lifetime. And also dementia also is largely also seen as part of aging. And because of that, it affects the way they seek help, even in the hospital. So for that reason, I identified the gap in knowledge and also the wrong perception that had fueled stigma against persons living with neurological condition, especially dementia, the older adults, as well as even other neurological condition like stroke. It's been seen as a spiritual attack rather than a medical condition. And that was what led us to starting Brain Health Initiative Nigeria. And this initiative was established to be able to create awareness around neurological condition, brain health issues, and also to run a campaign against a wrongful perception against stigma of stigma, and also to see how we can engage government at different levels to enact policies that support brain health and improve access to healthcare. And that's what the NGO is all about. Also, we also conduct research.
Now, you know, we talk about the stigma of dementia. I have several questions with regard to this, and I definitely want to deal in the research area. But first, one of the things you said was people come too late for an intervention. Now, in a way, that gives me hope, because what you're really saying is if they came earlier, we could do something for them. Now, this is definitely something that people in every country have a misconception about, that it is entirely hopeless. There's nothing that you can do. So let us say people came timely and we got that word out. What might be some of the interventions that you were able to do that really you see a little bit of results?
Yes. The recent Lancet paper that talked about dementia prevention and highlighting about 14 risk factors that increases the risk or increases the progression of disease in persons who has developed it. And that is one area that it costs less to implement, especially on the part of the government as well as on the part of the individuals and family, in terms of lifestyle modification, lifestyle changes, such that when people present early, there are things that we can actually start looking at. We can evaluate their current lifestyle and assess their risk level and see how we can actually talk to them to see how we can reduce the risk level. And there are interventions that are even non-pharmacological that does not require medication that we can actually tell them and they can start and then build habit around it, such that even though at the moment most neurological conditions don't have cure, however, there are symptoms and there are management that helps to reduce the progression of such diseases, especially with dementia. We know that once it sets, we can actually delay the progression by early intervention, such that the person can have meaningful life even while living with the disease.
So that's
one thing we can do.
That's a worldwide issue and a worldwide message. which is don't wait. There is something that you could do. Even if you can't be cured, you can delay, prevent, maintain. That's so important. The second thing you said that really triggered a lot of memories for me was misdiagnosing or having such a stereotype with regard to this that people are actually thought of as witches or possessed. I have to lay this on the line here for On the Ground. I first learned about this in a church in Portugal where money was being raised for women with basically grandchildren who were babies, where both of them were being labeled as witches because of this dementia, and put into what I would call camps. Now, I thought, and there's been some confirmation, that this is not a misconception, that this is a land grab, that this is a way of taking away the property and the homes of older women with no support and saying, well, look, they're possessed, they're evil, and it can be believed. Is this something you're actually seeing, or is it that there's a cultural, let's say, rather than a venal or financial reason that this is happening? Because if it's cultural, it could be fixed. If it's a crime, it's a different group that goes out of the hospital and into the police force. So tell me what you think about this. You're on the ground.
Yeah, it's both cultural, that is largely driven by ignorance, and also it's a crime by people exploiting those who are not cognitively tied to be able to make decisions for themselves. The cultural aspects, and like I said, is largely driven by ignorance, and also the belief system, religious belief system of the community. So, and oftentimes, and we've seen that those who are labeled as witches, older women who are labeled as witches, suffer a lot of bodily harm. They suffer even from their own immediate family members, talk less of even the community. Studies have shown that elder abuse is commoner among even family members, especially for those family members of those living with cognitive decline, even in our community. And this is largely driven by belief system and culture, which I believe can be changed with a lot of knowledge and awareness. And that's what the Brain Center is all about, Brain Health Initiative, to infuse the community with a lot of knowledge of what dementia is, and to explain to them this is not part of aging, or this is not as a result of any spiritual, does not have any spiritual connotation, except that there's an ongoing disease going on. And these things are manageable, even not curable, but they are manageable, they are treatable. And we've seen a lot of them coming out. What led us to starting Brain Health Initiative was as a result of we seeing bodily harm on, as in stretch, how do I put it, marks, as in bruises on older adults that were brought in even by their own family members. And further investigation showed that they are being locked up in a room. They don't want other people around to see them, because once that happens and the family is being tagged as a family who harbors witchcraft, they could be ostracized from the community. And that is what has been ongoing. And the fact that the person does not, they see the condition as an embarrassing condition to the family. So oftentimes they lock the person suffering from this condition out of the community, out of the family, and then not care for them optimally. That is what we've seen.
I mean, I'm so thrilled about our podcast, and I'll tell you why. This month that this is going to be aired is Elder Abuse Month, as designated by the United Nations. And we think about elder abuse in Western nations as largely financial. And it's pretty rampant here as well. Or as happening outside the family in nursing homes or other care homes where strangers are handling. But when you shine a light on this, you're doing so much work, such good. We're going to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, we're going to come back with Dr. Farambi, and we're going to talk about the Brain NGO, the Brain Center NGO that she's taking so much leadership in, and what is working in the face of all of these challenges. Don't you guys go anywhere. And now we are back, and we're back with Dr. Temitope. I like to say the name, Temitope. It's almost like a poem. Farambi, and she certainly toils in this area that's a very difficult area for everybody, and that is adult or mature brain health in areas like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and now, of course, with regard to the cultural view of dementia. Now, in the West, we haven't made a whole lot of progress because our problems about our cultural view is when we feel we have dementia, we stigmatize ourselves very quickly. In fact, if we forget a word, we say we're having a senior moment. When actually more pregnant women, I will say, because of hormonal changes, forget words more than seniors. But it's a stigma that we put on ourselves. So in your case, we've got that. We've got the community stigma, right? We've got the educational stigma. And yet some things are really working. So to inspire us to keep going on whatever our missions happen to be, regale us with a couple of stories where we really, you got somewhere.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yes, in the midst of a lot of things not working, we've been able to at least record some successes in our journey in the last 5 years that we started this campaign. And one of the major success that we could lay our hands on was that we were able to do a wide nationwide campaign using media, traditional media platforms, the local radio stations, and also the TV station. That really worked for us. And because of that, a lot of people, there was a lot of calling, live interview, where we had a lot of calling and people even cried on the live calling that they never knew that that was what their older person suffered from. Seeing people really cried, felt that no, they if they had known, they would have done better. And that is one thing that worked. And that also increased the uptake of those now who want to seek for help, now coming to the clinic to say, oh, I have a parent who has the symptoms you've described on there. Please, what can we do? And there, that led us to setting up what we call caregivers group, family caregivers group of persons with dementia, of Parkinson's with Parkinson's disease. And they form like a support group for themselves, and they become an advocate themselves about this condition in their own various spaces. And that is what the NGO actually made happen. So we were able to spread the news using the media, traditional media space, because we know that this population that we were trying to address, none of them use the social media space. However, for we know that some of them have grandchildren that they want, that are very vast with the use of social media. So we were able to use a multi-mode of information dissemination to ensure that we continue to talk about the symptoms of dementia in an open space. And that led also to people creating a space where they can actually express how they feel, because we set up what we call the family caregiver support group. So it's like a safe space for them to share their burden, and that actually worked. Because of that, we were able to, because Nigeria is very big, we are about a population of 230 million people, so we needed to be able to generate enough momentum so that we can be able to pull it to a national program. So we started in the southwest part of Nigeria, that is predominantly a Yoruba-speaking group. Then this same model was also applied to the southeastern part, where they predominantly speak Igbo. And this was led by another NGO Alzheimer's Disease Federation, ADF, in another region of the country. And they were able to implement this support group system that we did. And that worked. It doesn't cost much. It's just looking at the program that works. Of course, if approaching the media spaces to help us to hear this kind of thing as a form of CSR without us having to pay them, that worked for us. So because it's very expensive, engaging media slots, because it comes at a cost. But when we approach them as a form of CSR, just to share information and help and tell them and share our vision with them of what we do. Because we set up a campaign, and this campaign was 3 years ago, where we set up a campaign of a nation, a campaign called Dementia Not Witchcraft. The essence of this, yes. And it was widely publicized, such that we now started getting phone calls where persons living with dementia is being maybe perhaps being ostracized or being detained, or they want to criminally take away their properties. Then they call us to say, oh, this is happening. And this was as a result of the widespread media campaign. And this led to a national body, the National Senior Citizen Center in Nigeria, adopting that campaign to run across the length and breadth of Nigeria, such that we will be able to treat our older adult better. So those are the things. So these are the success stories that we've been able to have in the last.
It's enormous, enormous, and so many lessons here. One lesson is don't give up and just open up one little crack, and so much happens. Second of all, the practical aspect of it, that if you don't have the money, and most NGOs don't have the money for much, make sure that you know how to insinuate yourself as a nonprofit and ask. I'll say that in the West, I've been on the radio since 1988. We have something called PSAs, public service announcements, which is also free, and on all of our major radio stations throughout the country. So this is one way to do it in the West. There are other ways to do it in other countries, but there are ways to do it. That's so important. And I have to say that the perseverance and the continuity is, and the thought behind it, where you have two different languages to deal with, the collaboration. Every time I ask other NGOs on this show, what's the most important thing that they did, they'll all say collaborated with another group. So important. I do want to give you, before I leave, a personal thank you. When I was in Portugal, as I mentioned, I saw photos. And these photos included children. As I mentioned, the grandchildren of these women who were posed as witches. And they were taking care of these grandchildren. The parents were not. They were either passed away or gone or had left the country. And these children were also abused. And it in fact, one, they put a mask on his face of a devil. And he must have been 3 years old. And it broke my heart. And the thought of what you are doing to change this helps me personally, because I can't get the image out of my mind. And the fact that somebody's out there making change is so important on so many levels. So we want to support you. Mm-hmm. And how can we support you? Let's finish with that. And of course, we do have show notes, which means that we'll be able to, in writing, put down any place that we can make donations, or we can support you in any way, or get you as a resource. So let us hear now from you, and then we'll put all that information in the show notes.
Thank you very much. Of course, this one major issue around NGO is we have so much to do, but limited funding. So we are open to support funding from individuals and corporate bodies. Right now, our website was up, but then because of funding, it came down. We could not continue sustaining. We are trying to get it up, but we are active on LinkedIn and on other social media handles. When you go to Brain Health Initiative Nigeria, you see all the activities that we've been doing over the years. So we want that. And also, we want to have international collaboration such that what we do also is also validated, and then our government can actually show interest in what we do. And that will help us in fighting more for the policies and changing, because right now in Nigeria, we don't have a focused national dementia policy in place. And because Nigeria is big and a lot of fragmented healthcare system, but when we have our voice with other international voices resonating, I think the governments tend to listen better. So we need that kind of support as well as funding.
Well, you've got a lot of people listening who can give you some of that kind of support, and we'll make sure that they know all about you. Thank you so much. This has been one of the most surprising, by the way, and illuminating interviews I've ever had. Take care.
Well, thank you.
And for everybody else, you know what I'm going to say? Never stop changing the world. Okay, you can get off. I can't. So you'll get off soon. But let me just wrap this up. Obviously, this is not part of the recording. So you'll get links to everything, the big montage and this particular broadcast. Your broadcast will go this month because this is Elder Abuse Month at the UN. So this will actually be beyond whatever our next show is, which I think is probably the middle of next week. Okay. The next, and any way you can promote it, promote it. The next thing is you have to send to me your picture, a headshot. Okay. And you could send a bio, but that I kind of have, but you can send a bio if that's fast enough, but the picture I have to have. Okay. The other thing is I need any LinkedIn, site that you want to send people to, or any other site that you want to send people. The next thing is, in terms of donations, you don't have like a GoFundMe or a particular place where people can support you financially?
What we do is that we have a local currency account that we have opened for the NGO, where we put the account number, but we don't have GoFundMe, but we can, if that requires, also have an international donation, we can. But oftentimes we get local donation and we just post the account number there.
Right. So where is most of your funding coming from? You're doing it yourself?
Myself, families and friends that believe in what we do. And exactly. So that's it.
Right. Well, we'll see what we can do with that. I don't want to put anything public because it's very, very public. But the LinkedIn definitely, you should have. The other thing is I just did an interview with Claudia Mahler, Dr. Claudia Mahler. I don't know if you know her, but she is you'll meet her. You'll meet her in Cape Town.
Okay.
For one more year, she is what they call the independent expert on aging for the United Nations. She's hired by the United Nations, and she just told me that the next big campaign she's doing is calling on countries to tell their needs and to get the countries involved with all kinds of programs. I am actually work with tourism to get tourism less ageist, so that people will go to those countries and actually make more jobs for young people. So I'm working with the older traveler to get them into countries. In fact, I'm going to do this in Uganda in August.
You're welcome to Nigeria too.
I would love to. I'll talk about that in a second. So I'm proposing that to her. What we need in our world is more statistics for the over 60 tourists, over 80 tourists, to show that we bring in business. You should do things right for us. and you'll make more jobs. That's our pitch, totally different than yours. But she was very interested in having that included. And that's chicken feed compared to what you do. So you've got to meet her and you've got to find out exactly how. Now, on her part of where you're going to be in that montage, she's actually going to have the website to go to make your proposals and to ask. That's a very good place for you to get involved. Now, with regard to Nigeria, we're going to Uganda after the conference. Right after the conference, we go to Uganda. We're coming into South Africa or Africa, we don't know where, on the 1st of September. So we've got about 9 days in between the day we hit Africa and the day I have to be at the conference, which starts on the 9th. We don't have where we're going for those few days. I don't know much about sightseeing in Nigeria. I really don't. I in the world of tourism, Nigeria doesn't come up a lot. Other countries do because they have safari and this or that. So even if I don't visit, I would like to include tourism there. I don't know if you know anybody, if there's a tourist board. If you were taking a tourist to Nigeria, what would they see?
Yeah, we have a lot of places to see, you know. We can, Lagos is one place that is, and it's a coastal land. And beyond that, it's also a passage for the slavery part that they can see. In Badagry. So there we go to beaches and also the slavery part, where we call it point of no return. And then they can also see the footprint of the colonialism in Nigeria, the first story building in Nigeria. So there are places that we can curate that kind of visit for them in Lagos. And that also tells the stories, how the city was shaped and then how that has affected even in terms of culture and the rest.
Interesting. Okay. Because we do, we have another podcast called The Ageless Traveler. And we do a lot of Black travel, Black family travel, Black history travel. Sometimes the people who are interested in are Black, sometimes they're not. It's a big, I hope it's not a fan, but it's definitely a trend. Yes. And never once have I heard anybody mention this. So it's time for me to start to promote that, because that sounds, like it. I'm wondering even if we could work with, there's a wonderful tourist board in Alabama that works on the other end of this, which is the civil rights movement. Wouldn't that be something to go to Alabama, study the civil rights movement, go to Nigeria? What a trip.
Exactly. Yes. A good one.
That would be a good one. Okay. Very good. I'm going to let you go. You gave me a lot of good things for me. Made my day. I'll get in touch and send you the links to everything. I need your picture. And
I'll send the link.
Wait, okay? So I'm leaving to get Stuart. You can just get off. He's going to do this right.
Okay. Thank you.
Do I have anything extra on the books? Again, let me see the books. Okay, I'll have it when you're done.